This is The Guardian.
Today, two women, both skeptics of the COVID-19 vaccine, feel the pressure from vaccine mandates and make very different decisions. Julie has lived in the Australian city of Melbourne for 5 decades. She spent the past 10 years working at a law firm there.
I was a receptionist and just looking after our corporate clients, making sure that they were comfortable, that they were looked after with catering needs and Wi-Fi and anything that was technical, we would support them.
She's one of those people who just keeps the place running. She's warm and kind, and the work suited her.
I love working with people, and I was told by my management that I was doing a great job. I felt I had a great life, and things have changed very dramatically and in a way that I would never have thought or even dreamed or imagined.
When COVID arrived, Julie, like many people, was sent home from her job. Melbourne, in the state of Victoria, has experienced the longest COVID lockdowns of any city in the world. The state government is desperate not to send people home again and hopes the vaccine is the answer. Technically, the jab is voluntary, but unvaccinated people face some of the most extensive restrictions in the world, including Julie, who's been reluctant to get her shots. And so, while the rest of Melbourne has been getting on with things, Julie's life has been on hold. She can't go to cafes, cinemas, bookshops. It makes things like visiting her mum, age 93, in her nursing home impossible.
I can't step foot inside of a nursing home. I used to be able to go there every weekend, cook her breakfast in their spare kitchen there at the nursing home with her favourite food that she used to miss. That's all gone now.
When the state opened up a few months ago, the Victorian government made it clear that vaccines would be mandatory in offices like Julie's, and she got a call from her employer saying they'd love to have her back on one condition.
They asked me had I been vaccinated. I said I hadn't, and they said, but before you come back in when we open, you'll need to be double vaccinated.
Around the world, these kinds of vaccine mandates are becoming increasingly common as governments scramble to hold back variants like Omicron. In Australia, these kinds of restrictions are already widespread. For Julie and another woman in Melbourne, Carol, they faced an ultimatum: get vaccinated or lose your job. From The Guardian, I'm Michael Safi. Today in Focus, do vaccine mandates work?
The vocal crowd again brought city traffic to a standstill, marching from State Parliament to Carlton Gardens.
When vaccine mandates were introduced to Australia, where I grew up, it was no surprise to me that they were going to be controversial.
For the 7th consecutive weekend, our city streets swamped. Again, a mix of messages from vaccine mandates, segregation and side effects to suicide, media coverage.
For months, I'd been hearing from people I knew about how reluctant they were to get the vaccine. People like Julie, who's a family friend.
What did you think of the COVID vaccine when it was first announced about a year ago now?
It just so happens to be, Michael, about 2 years ago, I was online. I came across a TED talk with Bill Gates discussing in a lecture about his vaccines. And he was discussing how his vaccines, he wanted to depopulate the world.
I watched the video that Julie was referencing here, and what Gates was talking about was how improving public health using vaccinations, better medical care, and access to contraception would mean people choosing to have fewer children, and population growth would slow. But that isn't what Julie heard. She was worried vaccines might be part of some sinister plot, and the things she was reading on the internet supported that idea. She had other worries too.
I'm a Christian, and to know that the vaccines were being tested with an aborted fetal cell, I was concerned about that.
This is partially true. Fetal cell lines, which are cells grown in a lab based on aborted fetal cells produced decades ago, are used to test some vaccines. Nonetheless, organisations like the Vatican have said people of faith can and should take the COVID-19 vaccines and other vaccines in good conscience. Another big reason Julie had avoided the vaccine is, like some people, she just didn't think she needed it.
Michael, all my adult life, I have been fastidious about my health. I've even gone without things just to invest in my supplements. I eat well. I care for my body. I'm not anti-vax at all. I've had my vaccinations. My children are vaccinated. When they were young, they had all their vaccinations. But I was hoping that it would be pro-choice.
Julie isn't the only person I know who had misgivings when the vaccine mandate was announced. Carol, a relative of mine, runs a cafe with her husband. It was one of thousands of businesses in the city that had to shut their doors for months on end. The vaccine seemed to offer a way to stay open. But some of Carol's scepticism began with just how quickly successful trials of the vaccine were completed.
The first thing that came in my mind is, wow, that was extremely quick. We have never been successful in making a coronavirus vaccine, so I was really shocked to hear that they're actually producing one and they were saying it was going to be successful.
These vaccines were the first to successfully fight coronaviruses and were developed at record speed. But all the usual safety protocols were followed. It was an achievement celebrated by the scientific community, but that didn't reassure Carol.
We've lived with coronaviruses for many, many years. And I thought, well, why would this one be any different? It can't be that deadly.
Julie and Carol both had questions about how serious the virus was. Australia, with its strict lockdowns and border policies, has had a much lower death toll than other countries. More than 5 million people around the world have died from the virus. In Australia, that number is a little over 2,000.
And did you know anybody, Julie, who had gotten the virus or who had been to hospital with it or anything like that?
Over the course of time, family members had COVID and friends had COVID. The people that we knew with COVID had mild symptoms or no symptoms. So I can't talk for those that had severe symptoms.
Nicola Davis, you're the Guardian science correspondent and you've been covering COVID for two very long years now. For many countries around the world, getting the vaccine has been completely voluntary so far, and indeed making sure that it was voluntary was considered a really important part of the policy. So why are governments starting to shift on that point now?
There have been months and months where in wealthier countries, people have been able to go and get vaccinated. And yet, you know, there's still a relatively large proportion of people in many countries who haven't had their COVID jabs. And so there is a sense of urgency that we really need to protect people. We know these jabs will help to reduce the chance of ending up in hospital, even dying from the disease. So it, you know, it really is an important thing that people do have their COVID jabs. And then, of course, you know, that was a situation, you know, a couple of months ago. And now we've got the Omicron variant, which, you know, we know it seems to be more transmissible and, you know, cases are shooting up, you know, in the UK, but elsewhere as well. And all of that just adds to the urgency, adds to the pressure that we need to do something to protect people. And we know that jabs work. And whereas, you know, other interventions might help to reduce the spread or delay pressure on healthcare systems, we know that, you know, things like lockdowns work, but that is, you know, comes at a huge social, economic, personal cost to people. And so COVID jabs really do help to offer that protection.
Is there historically a precedent for vaccine mandates?
Yes, although it has varied a lot over time and between countries. So if we go back in history, let's go back to 1806. Eliza Bonaparte, that sister to the famous Napoleon, she ruled part of present-day Italy and she made vaccination against smallpox mandatory. In 1948, Austria's post-war government also made vaccination against smallpox compulsory by law. So those are a couple of historical examples. There are many more. If we look at the present-day situation, I mean, pre-COVID. If we look at Victoria in Australia, they're one of the places that has a no jab, no play policy. So children have to be vaccinated against sort of a list of diseases before they can be enrolled into childcare and things like that. And Italy has mandatory vaccinations for children against 10 diseases. You know, other places have also brought them in, sometimes temporarily. So if we look at New York, flu vaccines were mandatory for healthcare workers during the swine flu pandemic in 2009.
Right, so many countries have mandated different kinds of vaccines at one point or another, but this is the biggest global vaccine rollout in history, so the scale is much larger than anything we've ever seen. Where are we seeing the strictest mandates?
It does vary between countries. So, for example, Austria has announced plans to make COVID jabs mandatory from February. Germany's indicated it might do the same. Greece has already announced mandatory jabs for the over 60s. Indonesia, Turkmenistan, those have already made COVID jabs mandatory.
Okay, let's pick one of those countries. What about Austria? What will happen there if people choose not to get vaccinated?
What we're talking about here is really, you know, fines. So the idea is that, you know, you receive a summons to go and get your jabs, and if you ignore that, then you are fined. And the more times you ignore that, you know, your fine can ratchet up. And, you know, several thousand euros we're talking about here. And there have been reports that if you don't pay your fines, then you might even end up with a prison sentence. So we're really looking at that kind of penalty if you don't then go and get your jabs.
Okay, so you've talked about some mandates that are general, they apply to everyone. Other mandates are just for specific age groups. And then we have a kind of mandates that are tied to the kind of job you do. Let's start with England, where the focus is on care workers and healthcare workers. Why is the government doing it that way?
So yes, mandatory COVID vaccinations are being brought in England for health and social care workers. So frontline NHS staff and those who work in social care will have to be vaccinated from April. But actually, I mean, for those who work in care homes, COVID jabs are already compulsory. So the government have basically said that it's important to make sure, you know, NHS staff are vaccinated because, you know, they're dealing with very vulnerable patients. And the other aspect, of course, is to help to protect staff. You know, they're on the front line, so they have the risk of catching COVID from their colleagues or from patients. Staff have had to take time off with COVID or isolation or other things, you know, around the pandemic. And, you know, that then puts another burden because you've then got a stretched healthcare service and then you've got staff having to go off with sickness themselves.
That makes a lot of sense, especially for healthcare workers who, you know, sign up to this Hippocratic Oath where they're supposed to do no harm. But Julie works in an office and Carol in a cafe. How common is it for the vaccine to be required for jobs outside of healthcare?
So it is perhaps more common than you might think. Quite a lot of countries have gone down the route for employees, particularly if they're linked to government jobs, seems to be sort of one area that's being looked at. So Canada expanded their program. So by early next year, all federally regulated workplaces, you know, anyone who works in those sort of settings would need to be jabbed. But I mean, some countries have gone further. I mean, if you look at Australia, their sort of rules seem to be set by state. And if you look at the situation in Victoria in Australia, that program is covering a really wide range of jobs, so from retail workers to police to actors to journalists to professional sports people, MPs. You know, it's really a very long list there.
In Victoria, Carol, who still didn't want the jab herself, watched as vaccines became mandatory for one industry after another.
So I thought, oh, here we go. This is their way of introducing it and forcing it upon everybody. You know, they started with the construction workers and they weren't happy and they protested and they made a voice, but they weren't heard. Like, I could not believe this was happening, to be honest. What happened to the freedom of choice?
And do you remember when it became clear that for your business, for hospitality, that a vaccine would become something that was mandatory?
Yes, well, when we were told we were going to be hit with some ridiculous amount, like $100,000 fine or something like that, I thought, well, how are we going to run the risk of that? What if we got somebody came in and found out that, you know, we were both working, my husband and I, and weren't vaccinated, you know? And this is our livelihood. This is what pays our, you know, bills.
Nicola, we heard some of the reasons that Julie and Carol gave for why they didn't want the vaccine. And it strikes me that misinformation is its own public health problem here. Like, is there a chance that even the words vaccine mandate are going to play into some of these conspiratorial narratives out there? I mean, how big a problem is that for public health officials?
You know, experts have been saying that if people are very, very strongly anti-vaccine, I'm not talking about people who may be a little bit unsure or who haven't got round to it yet. I'm talking about, I mean, there are a group of people who are very, very anti-vaccine. And that group of people, a vaccine mandate is not likely to shift their stance or make them any more keen to get the jab, let's put it that way. There is a sense that it could play into that idea that, you know, there's some level of coercion there and you're being pushed into something you don't want to do, and that could be problematic.
What do we know about how effective this policy actually is?
There is evidence that vaccine mandates can increase uptake of jabs. Professor Julian Savulescu, who's director of the Oxford Uhiro Centre for Practical Ethics at the University of Oxford, I mean, he said to me, vaccine mandates work. And he said situations in Italy, US, Australia have shown that for other jabs. But in terms of COVID, he said there's more uncertainty in the public about the long-term safety profile, and so there's more resistance. So what experts have said to me is that one key issue is, you know, the level of opposition and you know, what's kind of holding people back from getting jabs. And of course, you know, then there's the concern that vaccine mandates could harm sort of trust in leadership, in public health, in authorities, by the public. So there is a concern as well that not only could it cause polarisation around COVID vaccines, but it could also have a knock-on effect for other vaccination programmes as well. You know, there is a real importance in public health of making sure that people are on board with the measures that are needed, not just for COVID, but for other diseases as well.
In September, Julie got that call from her office, spelling out what the vaccine mandate would mean for her job. By then, her mind was made up.
And I said to that staff member, I am so sorry. It looks like this is where we're going to part ways because I'm not going to have the vaccination. And I was so sad. I thought, if my passion and my love for what I did in my occupation and my knowledge that I had gathered over many decades and put into the company that I worked for, if that wasn't enough, and now they wanted me to participate in a medical intervention on top of all of what I had offered, I wasn't going to compromise that. And I don't blame my employer. I love those people. I love all the people I worked with. I still do. I don't hold them responsible, and I never have, and I never will.
And then when you hung up, do you remember how you reacted, what you did next? Because that's a pretty major life change happening in that call.
I was numb. I was just numb. I was silent for a long, long time. Partner was home at the time. I didn't tell him straight away. I just wanted some time to myself because I never, ever in my life imagined my career would end that way. I thought that I would be working for as long as I chose to want to work. I felt our democracy was gone that day. Those who've chosen to take the vaccine, that's wonderful too. They have got something that they can feel they can depend on and rely on. I'm happy, really happy for them. But I just wish that my choice would be respected as well and I could continue to work.
Nicola, listening to Julie, it's clear that she's really struggled with the consequences of her decision and that the government is exercising a really major power here.
It is something which is a very big thing to do. It's not going to affect people uniformly either. You know, we know it's going to affect certain demographic groups more than others. You know, some groups are more hesitant to be vaccinated and they have reasons and concerns why they are, you know, not so keen to get the jab. And so it's not like a uniform policy. It could affect some groups more than others.
Yeah, Nicola, I want to ask you about some of those inequalities because vaccine mandates are a pretty blunt instrument. And we see that there's often vaccine hesitancy among ethnic minority groups who historically have had pretty good reasons not to trust the medical establishment. They've been subject to unethical and discriminatory medical care in many cases. And I wonder if something like a vaccine mandate is able to account for that history and for their reasons for not wanting to be vaccinated.
Well, I think, as you said, you know, vaccine mandate is quite a blunt tool. And certainly there are concerns around that. As I said, you know, there is a concern that, you know, the mandate could affect more heavily certain minority groups. You know, and one issue there is, you know, even in terms of vaccinating health and social care workers, is that, you know, you could lose a significant number of staff from these minority groups. And that could have, you know, very serious consequences.
Julie decided, reluctantly, that she could walk away from her job. But for Carol, it was a bit more complicated. It came down to the restrictions on her children.
I had my son. He couldn't work anymore in the office. He had to go home, and he wasn't allowed to come back in until he was double vaccinated. My daughter had to go and get one shot. She was allowed to continue working with the one vaccine. They got emails from their unis. They can't go to uni next year without being double vaccinated. So they would have had to give up their education, and they would have had to give up their work, their career. Like, and what was I going to expect them to do for the next few years? Just sit at home. So, and that was the point that I thought, well, if the kids have to do it.
Was it this feeling of like, yeah, look, if my kids are doing it, I can't not do it?
Yes. It was a feeling of guilt, because for 2 years, a year and a half, I've been telling my kids, no, we're not going to take it. It's not for us. There's no need for it. You kids are safe. No one in your age group has died. So, but when they were put in the position they had to take it, I sort of felt guilty, if you know what I mean. Yeah, and I wanted to reassure them, look, we'll be okay. You guys will be okay. Look, Mum's going to take it. Dad will take it. We're all going to be okay.
The morning that you went to the doctor for the first one, how are you feeling about that?
Well, thank God I have faith, a Catholic faith, because, you know, saying a few prayers in the chair, watching my kids and husband do it, I think that's what made me at peace.
You know, you're okay, right? You're fine. Your kids are fine, thank God.
Yeah.
No problems.
Yeah.
How do you then feel about the vaccine? I mean, what do you now think about, not the mandate, we'll get to that, but just the vaccine itself?
Yeah, it was a bit of a relief. You feel like, okay, you've done this now, you've survived it. You feel good about it. It's actually you feel like you know, a load's off your shoulder, to be honest. We've just actually gone for our second dose just this afternoon.
And what was that like?
Yeah, it was easier. Much easier the second time around. Much, much more peaceful.
Coming up, vaccine mandates can persuade some to get their shots, but at what cost? The pressure of vaccine mandates worked to get Carol her shot. And I wondered if even tougher measures, like those introduced in Austria, could convince Julie.
Do you think that there's any kind of restriction that they could put on your life that would finally persuade you to get this vaccine?
No, never, 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 Michael, never. And do you know what? My heart goes out to the people in Austria. I know what's going on there. I feel for the people in Germany, because they're going to be in the same position in February of 2022. I pray that it doesn't happen here, but nothing will change my mind. Nothing, nothing, nothing.
Julie, for you, you know, you've said that this may be the end of your career. Financially, what does that mean for you to not be able to do this job that you are relying on to fund, you know, your lifestyle, your savings, I mean, everything for a few more years yet?
I've lost income, of course, and I've just cut back everything. I've had to change and rearrange my whole life. It's really day by day, Michael. It's just a day by day. I'm hoping that unvaccinated people will be invited back into the workforce. I don't know if this is going to stay the way it is with the vaccine mandates. I'm hoping it won't.
Julie is facing an uncertain future and is still adamant she won't get vaccinated. For Carol, who ultimately did take the vaccine, she's got her old life back and she's running the cafe, but the whole experience has left her feeling disrespected and disillusioned.
Yeah, I'm feeling disappointed and I'm concerned because you just worry, what else can they do to us? You know, because they gave us no choice. So I just feel like what else is there to come? What else could they do in the future? I didn't want this in my body. I didn't want it in my kid's body, but I felt like I had no choice. So, you know, I feel like my body, my choice has gone out the window. There's no such thing anymore.
Nicola, the World Health Organization Director for Europe, Hans Klug, said mandates around vaccination are an absolute last resort and only applicable when all feasible options to improve vaccination uptake have been exhausted. He also said that although mandates have increased uptake in some cases, that countries need to consider, he said, quote, public confidence and public trust. Are there other ideas for persuading people to get the jab without potentially having them lose their jobs or face other legal consequences?
Not everybody who's not taken a COVID jab is you know, a very strong anti-vaxxer. Some people have always had their jabs, but it's this particular one that they're concerned about. Engaging with individuals on their concerns is certainly one approach which many people say is really important. You know, you've also got situations like in the UK, we are bringing in vaccine passports. So, you know, saying, well, actually, you can only come into certain venues or certain events if you've can show that you've had your COVID jabs. You know, that's another thing. It's not imposing any sort of fine on people who are not vaccinated, but it's saying that if you are vaccinated, well, you know, life is a bit easier. So those are sort of other kind of mechanisms that you can create a little bit of pressure perhaps on people to be jabbed. You've also got vaccine passports around travel as well. So, you know, if you want to make travel easier, then get jabbed. You know, so there's different ways and often countries are trying several of these things at once. So there's no one answer. There's lots of different measures that can be done, you know, public information campaigns, you know, even just seeing well-known people roll up their arms and get their jabs can be another thing that people have tried. So there are lots of different ways that you can go about trying to address the issue and increase the uptake.
For those who are a bit hesitant, what do you think they ought to be doing to try to, you know, address some of those concerns?
You know, we know that there is a lot of misinformation flying around. We know on social media there's all sorts of myths and people saying all sorts of things. And I think that what's really important is that people go to a trusted and reputable source. So, you know, things like the NHS, go and talk to GPs, actually talk to those with the knowledge of these jabs and how they work and how the vaccines were developed. And there's lots of great information out there because we do have a lot of data now showing that these jabs do work to protect people against COVID and protecting everybody else. And I remember there are some people who cannot get COVID jabs or for whom COVID jabs don't work too well and who really are relying on those around them to get vaccinated.
Nicola Davis, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
That was Nicola Davis, a science correspondent with The Guardian. Thank you to her and also to Julie and Carol for sharing their stories with us. You can follow all of The Guardian's coverage of COVID-19 at theguardian.com. And while you're on the site, we also invite you to donate to our Christmas charity Appeal, which this year is focused on climate justice and helping those who have had their lives, homes and whole communities devastated by the climate crisis. Donate today at theguardian.com/charity2021. That's it for today. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Casson. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Mithili Rao and Phil Maynard. Back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.